Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by. Welcome to Innergex Renewable Energy's conference call and webcast for its 2014 year-end results and 2015 objectives. Bienvenue à la conférence téléphonique et la web diffusion des résultats de l'exercice 2014 et des objectifs 2015 d'Innergex Énergie Renouvelable. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. For analysts and institutional investors, and instructions will be provided at that time for you to queue up for questions. If anyone has any difficulties hearing the conference, please press star followed by zero for operator assistance at any time. I would like to remind everyone that this conference call and webcast is being recorded today, Wednesday, February 25th, 2015 at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. I will now turn the conference over to Marie-Josée Trévic, Director, Communications and Sustainable Development. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Bonjour, mesdames et messieurs. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. If you haven't done so already and would like to access the webcast, please go to our website at www.innergex.com. I'm here today with Mr. Michel Letellier, President and CEO of Innergex, Mr. Jean Perron, Chief Financial Officer, and Mr. Jean Trudel, Chief Investment Officer. Please note that the presentations will be in English. However, you are welcome to address your questions either in French or English. Vous êtes les bienvenus à poser vos questions en français. I would also like to point out that journalists are invited to call us afterwards if they wish to address any question. In a minute, Mr. Perron will provide some details on our financial results for the year ended December 31st, 2014. Mr. Letellier will then provide an overview of our operating activities in 2014 and our objectives for 2015, and Mr. Trudel will provide some highlights of our financing. We will then open the Q&A session with all three senior executives. The financial statements and the MD&A have been filed on SEDAR and are readily available via the Internet. You may also access the press release, financial statements, and the MD&A on the Innergex website in the Investors section. During this presentation, we will refer to financial measures such as adjusted EBITDA, free cash flow, and payout ratio that are not recognized measures according to International Financial Reporting Standards, as they do not have a standardized meaning. Please be advised that this conference call and webcast will contain forward-looking information that reflects the corporation's expectations with respect to future results and developments. For explanations concerning the principal assumptions used by the corporation to derive this forward-looking information and the principal risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially from those anticipated, I invite you to consult the first pages of the webcast presentation as well as Innergex's annual information form. I now turn the conference to Mr. Letellier.
Good morning, everybody. Just to inform you or clarify the new role of Jean Trudel, he will be now concentrating his effort toward M&A and development activities, mainly in U.S. and Europe. He will obviously continue as a chief investment officer to exert his leadership in finance as well. But it shows a little bit our new focus on getting out of Canada for the time being. Well, not the time being, just having a new way to look into international market. Jean Perron will take over with me the investor relationship. So for the rest of the presentation, Jean Perron will cover the financial results. So, without more clarification, Jean Perron, can you guide us to the financial report?
Merci, Michel. Good morning. The quarterly results for Q4 2014 are showing production that was at under 20% of the long-term average of 686 gigawatt hours, due mainly to above-average water flows in British Columbia. This translates into 820 gigawatt hours of production, compared with production of 497 gigawatt hours in Q4 2013. You will recall that last year production was well below the long-term average of 609 gigawatt hours for the quarter. Revenues for the quarter were $68.2 million, compared with $41.4 million in 2013. The increase is due to the above-average water flows, to the addition of Kay Creek and Northwest State River facilities, both commissioned at the end of 2013, and to the acquisition of SM1 in June 2014. Higher production in Q4 brought the production to 100% of the long-term average for the year. This brings the company cumulative production to 99% of the long-term average since Innergex IPO in 2003 and demonstrates the accuracy of Innergex prediction regarding production at each of its facilities. operating expenses, G&A, and prospective expenses for Q4 were up $3.7 million or 23% due to the greater number of facilities in operation. Adjusted EBITDA stood at $48.7 million compared to $25.6 million in 2013. The increase is mainly due to the higher production. Similarly, finance costs were up $4.6 million or 29% due to the addition of the new facilities. During the quarter, interest rates went down, which resulted in an unrealized loss on derivative financial instruments of $49.6 million. This non-cash item is due to the fairly large amount of bond forwards used to hedge our exposure to interest rate movements for all the project financing to be closed in the coming year. These bond forwards will be settled simultaneously with the closing of project financing for the Upper Lillooet, Boulder Creek, Big Silver Creek, and MU projects. Excluding this unrealized loss on the derivatives and the related income taxes, net earnings would have reached $11.2 million for the fourth quarter, compared with a net loss of $5.5 million in 2013. Overall, a very strong fourth quarter allowed us to end the year on a positive note by reaching our long-term average production. All three sectors, namely hydro, wind, and solar, were basically in line with their respective long-term averages. As a result, revenues for the year increased 22% from $198 million last year to $242 million this year, and adjusted EBITDA increased 21% from $149 million to $180 million this year. The increased adjusted EBITDA was partially offset by higher finance costs, which rose from $65.2 million to $86.5 million. Most importantly, our free cash flow increased from $59 million to $67.7 million, and our payout ratio improved from 93% in 2013 to 88% in 2014. Since the beginning of the year 2015, our production has been above the long-term average at most facilities, and particularly in BC. It is still very early in the year and much too early to guess what the energy, wind, and solar regime will be this year, but nevertheless, we remain confident in our ability to reach our long-term average production figures year over year. This concludes my review of the results. I'll be happy to answer your question later on during the call, and I'm now going to be back.
Good morning, sir. So, all in all, a very good last quarter, and definitely very happy towards what we are going to focus on 2015. Just a quick reminder, as Marie-José said, you can follow the webcast on the Energex website. So I'll be covering the webcast, not necessarily explaining or giving you all the details on the webcast. I'm inviting you to take a closer look at the end, but I'll comment on most of the pages. So we'll do a very quick recap on what happened in 2014, our objective for 2015, and look into 2017 cash flow and EBITDA, and a perspective on a long outlook between 2015 and 2020 after our strategic reflection during the 2014. And obviously we'll be available for questions afterwards. So if we come back to 2014, we said we would increase our EBITDA by 20%. We did 21%. We increased our production by 24% and our revenue by 22%. Thanks also to the additional contribution for SM1 hydro facility that we acquired in June. If you remember, that's a 30 megawatt facility in Quebec. Very happy to have that new facility in our portfolio. What we said also in project development is that we were to advance Big Silver. We would finalize the MU project, both permitting, and I'll get back into the next slide a little bit in more detail, and that we would be initiating our Saint-Paulin and Windsor renewal process with Hydro-Québec. So if you look in the next page, we're talking about the development project. If we start with Treadaway Creek in BC, that project will reach COD. Now we're forecasting early Q4 for Treadaway Creek. Very, very well advanced. turbine component are to be delivered on site. Civil works, penstock, the powerhouse are very advanced. So far, we're very, very pleased with the advancements of the construction. We had a very mild winter also in BC, so that helped advancing construction in BC. The next wave of project is Boulder and Upper Lillooet. These two, as you remember, have not advanced during winter because the winter work over there has stopped because of the snow, and it was basically forecast this way. We're keeping the winter of 2015 and 16 as a buffer in order to advance the tunnel, which are still on the critical path. That's the only, I would say, concern we have in terms of advancement in Boulder and Upper Lillooet. It's not that it's different than what the type of risk we were looking into the tunnel. It's just that until it's done, it's still the main concern on these two projects. Overall, Boulder and Upper Lillooet are going very well. As we mentioned in the last call, things have started up to be very good at the end of the year. We have closed the construction site with a very positive note in completing the switchover in the water intake from the excavated canal to bypass the river. So that has been done in time. So construction should start somewhere in end of April in those two projects. One project that we said we would start construction is Big Silver Creek. As I mentioned, we had a very pleasant winter so far and a very, late winter also. So that means that we were able to work very easily in Big Silver. Tunnel, I'm pleased to announce that we have achieved more than 50% advancement in the tunnel. So this is very good. Rock condition are as we have planned, if not a little bit better. We intend to finish the tunnel by July, so this tunnel will be behind us in Big Silver Creek. Other than that, Big Silver is doing very well on the power plant, the water intake as well. All in all, we're quite in advance in what we had anticipated in Big Silver. But I guess the best update is on MU project, this 150-megawatt wind farm in Quebec. We have advanced that project a lot in 2014. We have completed the public hearing process, and we have obtained all the important permits in MU. We have started the construction or the pre-construction activities by clearing trees, and we have signed the turbine supply agreement with Saint-Vion. Very, very pleased with that contract. We were able to convince Saint-Vion to bring the 3-megawatt machine instead of the 2.2-megawatt machine. And through that process, we have saved $25 million on that project, mainly because we have selected that machine. Also, we were able to negotiate a long-term service agreement with Saint-Vion that helped save about $3 million in the operation cost of that particular project. So we have increased our guidance by $3 million on EBITDA for that particular project. So all good news on this project. We just received also last week five proposals for the balance of plant. I'm pleased to report that this seems to be consistent with our forecast, so we don't see any increase in the balance of plant that we were forecasting for this project. So all in all, that project is doing very, very well, and construction should start as soon as the snow cleared in the Gaspé Peninsula. I guess that through those comments, you can feel that we're very confident in the advancement and the construction of those projects. As a portfolio, we're very, very confident that we'll meet the expected cost and expected COD on this project. Personally, I think we have de-risked a lot this development pipeline, and hence we're very, very confident towards the our ability to raise the expectation of the cash flow for the 2017. Now I'll let Jean Trudel cover the project financing piece on this development pipeline. So Jean, can you go ahead?
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Michel. Good morning, everyone. So just on slide 9, I guess, we're happy to report that actually we, well, it's not all news for you, but Turtle Creek financing was put in place this year. One important factor that we did also throughout 2014 was to implement and complete our hedging program for all our projects, but also Mezgi-Gugruzun project. So we're protecting the economic value of our project. So so that's a very important aspect, because if rates were to rise, it could be problematic. And in our case, the rates went the other way, but I think this this hedging program had to be put in place, so it was done. Also, late in the year, we signed an engagement letter and a term sheet with very attractive conditions, actually, for the Upper Lillooet River and Boulder Creek project. It's a very significant financing. We were happy to see that the Canadian market could actually be competitive, and that we could receive several offers to finance a sizable amount like this. Also, we received several proposals for Big Silver Creek. We started the process for this one after Upper Lillooet, but now we are in the midst of signing engagement letters and term sheets also on Big Silver. As far as Umbada Falls go, it's a small project financing that we have. It's a mini-perm financing that came to its maturity. So what we did so far is that we concentrated on the larger financings. We extended the maturity date of Umbada Falls, and we're in the process of completing the refinancing of this asset as well. So just on page 10, I guess it gives you an overview of the size of each of these financings. And the expected timing to close. Of course, these amounts are not inclusive of the hedging losses, the unrealized hedging losses that we have on these assets, but these are financeable. So the amounts that you see here are not accounting for that. There's about $90 million as at December 31st of hedging losses that will be financed. And of course, it's part of our term sheets and engagement letter that these amounts would be completely financed. So we're all neutral in the sense that the project can support a greater amount of debt because the rates are so much lower today than they were when we hedged. So it works perfectly well to protect the value of these projects. We are very, very advanced on Boulder Creek and Upper Lillooet. It's combined together. Over the next weeks, we should be in a position to finalize this financing. Then Big Silver will be the next one, we will shortly start also on Mezgi-Gugruzun as soon as we've signed all the main contracts and that the numbers are finalized. Then at that point in time, we'll be able to start the process for Mezgi-Gugruzun. There's obviously a lot of interest still in the financial community for financing of these projects, so there's no worries from this end of things. So on this, I guess I will just switch it back to you, Michel.
All right, thank you. So we're coming back just to a quick recall on 2014 report card. We were looking into opportunity, if you remember, on the RFP of Quebec. We had submitted a little bit more than 800 megawatt of project. We still think they were very competitive and very good. The numbers are now more open into the La Régie de l'énergie here in Quebec, so we can balance what we had bid. So all in all, Well, I think as the competition goes, we were very close, so we have not been disqualified in terms of return or out market completely. It's just that this RFP was very, very competitive and only three projects were selected. So it's good for the next time. We've learned. We are adjusting, so very still positive toward future project in Canada and being able to compete. Remember that we have qualified for 440 megawatt for the Ontario RFP. We'll talk about a little bit more on our objective of 2015, but this RFP is on our priority list also for 2015. In terms of growth opportunity in 2014, we said that we would close SM1, so we did, and we were looking. We have also looked into a few acquisition. We have learned from these, participation in process. We are adjusting, and we'll talk about it into the long-term outlook. So if we're coming back to 2015 objective, which is basically a little bit more forward-looking, in terms of operating performance, we'll grow our production by 3 to 5%. That takes into account the full participation of SM1. Adjusted EBITDA should grow by 1%. Why is because we are focusing a little bit more on the prospective project in international markets. We're investing a little bit more money there, so hence it's creating a little bit more pressure in the expense, but I think it's well invested money, and we'll maintain a payout ratio below 100%. In terms of development, we want to still focus on execution. As we mentioned, we have four projects under construction in BC and one in Quebec. These are very important for us, and it's bringing a lot of future cash flow, so we are focusing on execution. I think that from the past, you've seen that we're pretty good on execution, and we're not about to change. This is the trademark of Innergex in delivering budget on time and on budget, so we are going to focus on that for 2015. That doesn't mean that we'll not be looking into growth opportunity. We'll submit project in the Ontario market. We're advancing some project, prospective project in BC, mainly the Incha project, the Nolke Hill project, and to some degree here in Quebec, we have our First Nation project in Hydro in the west of Quebec called Kipawa. We might have a chance to bring that project forward for future RFP, potential future RFP in First Nation owned project in Quebec. But I think that it's the first year we're so, outspoken or open about the idea of going into international market. Obviously, we'll do it the way Innergex has always been doing it, meaning that we'll do it into a balanced approach. We want to make sure that we keep our low risk and long-term view in this future investment in international area. I think that you've heard me say quite a bit of time that it's a question of balance. We want to make sure that we have a strong cash flow to support development activities and construction activities while remaining positive or open to take risk into prospective projects. So that's what we're going to do, but in a balanced way. And being international, we won't change our focus on making sure that we're managing our risk and we keep our focus. I think that if we look into that, brings us to also the lookout for 2015 run rate. I think that I'm trying to convince people that we're very, very confident in the way we are managing our development project. When we say development project, it's a construction. Like I said, it's our focus. It's our trademark to be able to deliver those projects. And with that confidence, we can talk about free cash flow of 2017. Obviously, that doesn't take into account future investment or acquisition. These numbers, both on EBITDA and cash flow, is only based on the existing portfolio that we have with the development project that we have. And it's taking into account about $8 million of prospective project per year. Those are included into the EBITDA and into the free cash flow. But it doesn't it doesn't take into account any potential acquisition or future development in those numbers. So again, I think that we can feel very comfortable by 2017 that we'll reach $295 million of EBITDA. That would translate with $95 million of free cash flow available for both paying the dividend and invest in our future growth of the projects. So that brings us to the overview of 2015 and 2020. Again, I think it's important to restate our focus and statement. We will remain exclusively in renewable energy. We'll maintain the diversification of energy source, mainly hydro, wind, and solar, and we'll try to improve on the portion of solar in our portfolio. We want to still be a leader in a position in Canada. We still believe that Canada has a great potential going forward, but we agree that the growth might be slower in the next few years in Canada, so hence our willingness to look into international market. But like I say, we'll do it in the target market without taking undue risk and making sure that we'll try to create value for our shareholder in doing so. So again, focus on high quality asset, especially hydro if we can. And I think that we have a knowledge in hydro, and we are fully integrated in our ability to create value in the engineering, construction, and operation of hydro. We want to maintain a low-risk business model, maintain a long-term outlook, focused on partnership, especially with First Nation. I think that we have shown that we have this ability to create value for First Nation and local partners. Into a win-win situation. Like I said quite often, we believe in sustainable development, and sustainable development goes through the 3P, the planet, the people, and the profit. We want to make sure that we have a balanced approach with those three components of the sustainable development. And we'll maintain a discipline of acquisition that are accretive to cash flow. This will be important for us into any future M&A activity. So in summary, I think that Innergex has a sustainable dividend. We are showing our confidence in this by increasing our dividend by 2 cents this year. We've done the same thing last year. So I think that it shows the commitment of the management and the board of directors towards rewarding our shareholders and our confidence that the company has a bright future in terms of free cash flow. We just gone through the 2017 numbers that translate into 18% growth in our EBITDA from $180 to $295 million of EBITDA for the company, and the free cash flow growing from roughly $68 to $95 million. So that translates to a 12% growth component on our free cash flow, which is, I think, a very positive. We'll be looking towards having a payout ratio stabilizing around 80%. And obviously, with the numbers that we have give you, that is freeing some room to increase dividend as our cash flow increase for the future. So very very happy to close 2014 and very positive to enter 2015. So on this, I'm happy to answer questions. So Arj Bojan. Thank you.
Thank you, Michel. This completes our presentation, and we now invite you to ask your questions. Nous vous invitons à poser vos questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now conduct the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press the star followed by the one on your touch-tone phone. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request. Your questions will be polled in the order they are received. Please ensure you lift the handset if you are using a speakerphone before pressing any keys. One moment, please, for your first question. Your first question comes from the line of Nelson Ng with RBC Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Great, thanks, and congratulations on a strong quarter.
Thank you.
Just a quick question on the international markets. So I think you mentioned that Jean Trudeau will focus on expansions and M&A in the U.S. and Europe. In Europe, can you specify which countries you're focused on?
Well, Europe is... it's difficult to say country in Europe because obviously they're interlinked, but the typical would be probably focusing on France and perhaps UK, but obviously Germany is very close to France as well. But we'll try to stay away from Portugal, Spain, or Italy. That seems to be a little bit more difficult to predict. So that's being Europe. The U.S., as you know, is a huge market. It's a little bit sometimes complicated to understand where they're going, but obviously we're interested in the U.S. One thing I didn't say, and it's probably going to be covered, but we'll be looking also toward South America or Central America, well, not Central America, but maybe Mexico. As you might have seen, Mexico seems to be going through a change in legislation that would enable IPP like us to participate more in the market. So we're interested. We're curious about those markets. And the twist that we'd like to have is maybe take advantage of the hydro component that we have and the ability to create value in engineering, early engineering. There's not, I would say that there's probably less competition in the hydro sector, especially in those markets, than solar or wind. That doesn't mean that we wouldn't be interested in looking into wind and solar in Mexico or somewhere else, but we think that we have a little bit more competitive edge if we can develop a hydro facility.
I see. So just to clarify, you would kind of focus more on hydro in Mexico and South America, whereas for the U.S. and Europe, it would be wind and solar?
That's fair to say, but obviously, as you know, when opportunity arises, we would be flexible. But that's our perception of our, advantage to enter the Mexican market and maybe South American market.
I see. And then just on that, in terms of the international markets, will you be looking to form any joint ventures with local partners, or are you kind of exploring all opportunities and all options?
Well, obviously, as you've seen in the past, we're quite open to make partnership and joint venture. I think that this is probably a win-win situation when we enter. If we can create and help a local partner by our expertise and our capital, that would be great. We'll also be focusing on making sure that we're creating some value also in the financial engineering. We won't be shy to try to maximize our after-tax return through potential joint venture with pension fund of late, like we've done with SM1. I think that we can manage to reduce the risk and improve on after-tax money by looking into those financial engineering as well.
I see. Okay. And then just a few questions on the dividend policy and payout ratio. So you mentioned that you're targeting an 80% payout ratio longer term. I guess given that there's a bump in cash flows in 2017, are you guys looking to gradually grow dividends each year, or would there be a decent bump, a one-time increase in 2017?
I think that the theory behind market valuation is leaned towards being steady and predictable, so we would rather have a trend, establishing a trend for growing the dividend than just raising in a sharp move the dividend. I don't think it would create any good for us other than having maybe the stock to be bumped once that happened. So that's why I encourage you guys to look into a little bit more in detail our 2017 cash flow. Like I said, we're very, very confident in our ability to deliver the existing construction pipeline, and hence the board also feel comfortable, and that's why we have seen the increase of the dividend last year and this year as well.
Okay, thanks. And then just one last question. In terms of 2015, you mentioned that EBITDA will increase modestly by about 1%. But in terms of free cash flow, is that actually going to decline in 2015 a little bit? I'm just thinking the debt repayment is probably going to be a little higher, and cash flows to non-controlling interest might be a little higher as well in 2015.
You're so close into the margin that, as you've seen, a little bit of production over the average can make quite a bit of a difference. So it's very, I guess, so close that either of, I think that you can, you know, we can say that 2014 cash flow and 2015 cash flow will look little bit the same, mind you, that we'll try to be below the payout ratio, below 100%. But that depends also on how much possibility or project that will work on 2015. But I mean, it's not material at all, I think.
Okay, thanks. Those are my questions.
Your next question comes from the line of Ben Pham with BMO Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Thank you, and good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I wanted to go back to the commentary about the non-Canadian, just looking at non-Canadian opportunities more. And I'm just wondering, when you think about a potential initial deployment of capital, I was wondering what do you have a dollar amount in mind for something that if something that did come up in terms of how much capital you would put in initially?
Well, no, it will depend. Like I said, we could also enter into a transaction knowing that we have the ability to sell part to a financial partner as well. I think that you've seen in the past that we have been balanced in our approach. We don't want to spook the market. We don't want to surprise the investor by doing something out of the, I would say, something prudent. So we'll be guided by those. That doesn't necessarily mean that we won't be looking into a material acquisition. Something over $100 million worth of investment, if it's existing, would not be a big issue for us, provided that the basis of those potential investment would be covered by long-term contract, good equipment, long-term view. All these things will be considered, and again, will not change our view or our investment thesis because we're going internationally. We'll be selective, we'll be disciplined, and we'll think about long-term, and we'll think about creating value for our shareholders.
Okay, and then just going back to the free cash flow guidance for 17, are you assuming a lot more cash taxes to be paid at that time, or do you have a lot of tax pools to shield yourself for quite a number of years beyond that?
Well, Jean-Pierre is the expert, but we're not expecting to pay a huge amount of tax for the next 4 or 5 years. And obviously, always working to improve and trying to defer the payment by replenishing the tax pool. Obviously, Jean has many tricks in his pocket to reshuffle our structure. This is fairly complicated, so we have maybe some room still to improve on that aspect. And as we grow and as we acquire more assets, obviously that pool is replenished, and we're trying to plan to put those assets where they are more, I guess, efficient tax-wise.
Okay, great. Those are my questions. Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from the line of Rupert Merer with National Bank. Your line is open.
Good morning, everyone.
Hey, Rupert.
Just going a little deeper into your potential to grow internationally, how much have you looked into the potential for hydro developments in Mexico and South America? Do you have a sense of the size of that opportunity, how many project opportunities there may be available at this point?
We'll comment later on. We'll keep you posted. But while we were fairly surprised in terms of potential, I would say that the type of project that seems to be available are a little bit like British Columbia. In matter of fact, there's a pocket of market that looks a lot like British Columbia, high head project with penstock, tunnel, all kinds of sedimentation problem with the water intake, all those things that we love to think about and take care of. So I think that the type of project can be from 8 megawatt to 40, 50, 60 megawatt. I don't think we'll enter into a huge project in the 400, 500 megawatt type. I'm not saying that we'll never participate in such a project, but I think the sweet spot for us would be typical project like we've been very successful in BC.
Are there any opportunities for M&A in hydro in South America and Mexico at this point? Are you aware of any operating assets that look like they would be of interest to you, or do you think that acquisitions there could be more along the lines of development assets?
I think that I'm not excluding some, but I think there's since those markets are more growing market, there's more opportunity to create development opportunity and hence put a little bit of our knowledge to work. I think that Europe is a much more mature market, and hence there's a lot more asset, existing asset that might come for sale. So I guess it's the perfect world will be to acquire existing cash flow being accretive out of Europe and create value in putting our knowledge into Mexico or South America, mainly in hydro. So that would be our perfect, penetration of acquisition and development.
Great. And then secondly, you have a convertible debenture that's callable on April 30th. It seems to be in the money. How are you looking at that today? It looks like you might benefit from not forcing conversion. Have you thought about what you could do with that convertible debenture if the share price remains where it is today?
Obviously, we're looking in all our options, but that debenture is out there and it's trading as it trades. If we don't need capital, as we, again, I think that it's important to restate that we don't need any capital to do the project that we have already in the development. We are fully financed with the project finance and the equity that we have. So if we are not successful in acquisition or gaining new project, there's no need to do anything with that debenture.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, if there are any additional questions at this time, please press the star followed by the one. As a reminder, if you're using a speakerphone, please lift the handset before pressing the keys. Your next question comes from the line of Matthew Ackman with Scotiabank. Your line is open.
Thank you very much. Good morning. Just on the financing, you guys were just, I think you, what you're saying is you don't need any additional equity, and I'm just wanting to confirm that that includes for the MU Wind project.
That's confirmed. It's all our project, including MU, in terms of equity.
How do you think of the where the equity came from for that project? Because obviously there hasn't been a lot of free cash generation. So where? How do you think about that?
We have better finance than anticipated, and we have the DRIP, and it was already included in our capacity, the existing line that we have. If you remember, we have an asset that covers the $425 million line that we have. So that is our buffer to use for equity purposes. But again, this is backed by 13 assets with long-term PPA.
Okay. Just shifting to the development, the international development, you guys sort of dipped your toe in the water just a little bit on merchant in the U.S. Around mid-sea, and I'm just wondering if you have any appetite for any further merchant exposure in the U.S. at all as you look towards your development there.
As you know, Matthew, we had the long discussion when we acquired Miller Creek, which is in Canada and exposed to the mid-sea market. We're not a big fan of taking risk in the merchant market, although we thought that Miller Creek was a great asset. As you might have seen, we have produced a lot more than we had anticipated. We had update on the facility that enabled us to produce a lot more than the previous owner, and we also had a plan to reduce costs. So we felt confident at the time that there were a lot of synergy and fixing on that facility that enabled us very, very comfortable forecast for that particular plant, even though we were on merchant. But we're not very keen in taking merchant risk. Not say that through a portfolio or something that we not that we would not be ending up with exposure, but it's definitely our cup of tea.
Okay, and then just I guess last point is on FX. You know, are you guys have you given any thought to whether if you go international, you'd be willing to take that kind of exposure, or would you do more like you have with other projects and try and lock in a kind of a Canadian cash flow stream supporting the dividend?
We will be very cautious. We've seen a lot of our peers being hurt when exchange rate went against their currency where they were paying dividend. Very, very well aware of that. So we'll arrange either natural hedge throughout our balance sheet financing. As we mentioned, we have $425 million of financing in Canadian dollar that can be switched into euro or any other currency that would hedge ourselves. So we will look into also strategy in terms of hedge. And we'll place that into any future acquisition. So we're very, very minded into mixing, or not mixing, but how do we say, matching the risk exposure between our dividend and the currency where the cash flow are coming from. Not keen to take naked exposure on currency.
Okay. Thank you very much. Those are my questions.
My pleasure.
Your next question comes from the line of Nelson Ng with RBC Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Great, thanks. Just a few follow-up questions for you. In terms of the six projects with the Inukshuk projects in BC, what's the expected timing for a PPA? Have you made progress with the province in terms of getting a PPA, and is this going to be a long process?
You're asking me if dealing with government are easy? No. But we're positive. We're seeing advancement. We're trying to be creative in terms of pricing and what should be included in the pricing. We've seen BC government being creative with the pricing of Site C. So we're just hoping that they can be as creative when we're talking about IPP and First Nation project. But that being said, we are engaged with government and BC Hydro and our First Nation partner towards finding a solution, and we're still positive towards hopefully during 2015 to come to a conclusion.
Okay, and then separately, in terms of the wheeling services that your hydro developments received, do you expect any expect to receive any cash for wheeling services in 2015?
Yes, we in 2014 we had the interconnection reimbursement through Tsai Tsui. In 2015, we're planning to receive about the big silver, but how much is 3 million, I think, around $3 million from big silver.
Okay, perfect. And then, just quickly on hydrology and wind resources so far to date, do you have a quick update in terms of the year-to-date resources so far?
Yeah, well, Nelson, you look across your window in Vancouver. Do you see snow on the top of the mountain range?
It's been really nice. Great weather here.
And for a while, you heard me saying that it was not normal winter in BC. The last 3 years, I've been very cold in BC, and we started the year always behind. This year is the reverse. We're probably close to 200% in over budget in the portfolio of hydro in BC. Wind in Quebec is a little bit slow, not bad, but not over budget. And solar just slightly below long-term average because we had quite a bit of snow in Ontario that somehow slowed down the production in solar. But all in all, and the hydro in Quebec is doing just fine, slightly over budget so far.
Okay, thanks, Michelle. And just one last question for Jean Trudeau. In terms of the financing for the remaining hydro projects, do you expect that those projects will also have a 5-year interest-only period before amortization starts?
Yeah, that's typically the structures that we're using now. Like we aim to get some form of interest-only period. So yes, that's our goal.
Okay, great. Thanks for that.
Your next question comes from the line of John Mould with TD Securities. Your line is open.
Thanks. Good morning. Just a quick question for you on the Ontario LRP. There's been some press about some potential local opposition to your Mattawa wind project, and you know, mainly just more generally. Can you talk a bit about the importance of local support for that RFP and how that's unfolding for you so far?
Yeah. Well, as a policy, we will not be commenting on project in the process of RFP. But in general, as you know, Innergex believe in sustainable development, and obviously we are aiming to have support from a local group, and we'll act accordingly throughout the RFP process.
Okay. Fair enough. Everything else that I had has been answered. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Ms. Privik, there are no further questions at this time.
Thank you, and thank you, everyone. We appreciate this opportunity to provide an update of our company. Please don't hesitate to contact us if you ever have other questions.
Merci à tous. Nous apprécions cette occasion de vous faire une mise à jour de nos activités et n'hésitez pas à nous contacter si vous avez d'autres questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes our conference call and webcast. Please note that a replay of the conference call and webcast will be available on the Innergex website. The press release, financial statements, and the management's discussion and analysis are also available on the Innergex website at www.innergex.com in the investors section. Thank you. You may now disconnect your lines.